The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love Home Title Lock. Yeah. Home Title Lock is actually a company that Stu introduced me to, I don't know, about 6 months ago or so. And I had no idea. I had no idea people could literally take your title of your house and claim to own your house. And then you're done. You're out.
Yeah. I mean, they can borrow, you know, giant, take big loans out, you know, with banks against your equity. And then you're stuck with the bills. Not something that you want to happen.
And it's really, you know, when they demonstrated it, they came here and they demonstrated it.
Terrifying.
How easy it is. You're like, what? I mean, this may have already happened to you. This could be happening to your parents. Imagine somebody just taking your title. They own your house. The bank, then they go to another bank and they say, hey, I want to take out a $100,000 equity loan. They take the money. They leave. You start getting bills. You never took that loan out.
Yeah, and the only way you can get rid of this possibility is by going to Home Title Lock. They have a $100 search. It's a free title scan. They'll do it for you when you go to HomeTitleLock.com and sign up. Why not take the free value here and knock this problem out? It's one of the fastest growing crimes in America, home title fraud. So go to HomeTitleLock.com right now. It's HomeTitleLock.com.
Glenn Beck.
Brenda Snipes. Don't you just love Broward County? Oh, Broward County. You've got the best in sheriffs. You have the best in election supervisors. You have the best in school boards. Boy, Broward County, you ought to be mighty proud. She is, she might want to remove the Broward County election supervisor from her LinkedIn profile pretty soon. In fact, she might want to just delete her profile altogether. While she's at it, maybe a name change, because things aren't really going well for Brenda Snipes. All signs are now pointing towards Snipes getting removed from office by Governor Rick Scott or his likely successor, Ron DeSantis. That is, if Florida ever finishes counting votes or counting hands. I don't know if they're doing a show of hands now. However, Florida does its elections now. Every day it seems to be more and more like a Dave Barry novel down in Florida. So I'm not really sure how they do it, but they should finish pretty soon. Florida is in the middle of three statewide recounts for the U.S. Senate and governor's races, plus the one that really has the nation on the edge of its seat, the state agriculture commissioner. How is that one going to land? You know it's bad when Democrats start losing support from fellow Democrats, as Snipes has. One state Senate Democrat who declined to be named told Politico he hopes Snipes will quit soon. Quote, otherwise she's a goner, end quote. Now, she is accused of a laundry list of no-nos, including a 2016 mailing that went out to an unknown member of absentee ballots that left off the proposed state constitutional amendment. Oops, I forgot to include that constitutional amendment thingy. Sorry about that. Also in 2016, she posted early voting numbers online half an hour before the polls closed. Half an hour before the polls closed. When did that happen before in Florida and it caused some problems? I remember the 2000 election. Well, why learn from that? She also was opening ballots in private. What could happen? After last week's election, in the middle of the night, her office suddenly uploaded tens of thousands of new ballots that caused Governor Scott's margin to fall below 0.5% lead in his Senate race against Bill Nelson. That triggered a manual recount. But who doesn't upload thousands of new voters, you know, after the election? There's a lot more problems with the Broward County Elections Office, but, you know, we only have 3 hours. If nothing else, it is clear that Snipes is guilty of extreme incompetence with the missed deadlines, discovering ballots in the couch cushions. As county election supervisor, you know, you really only have to prepare one big event, you know, every 2 years. It's kind of like Santa Claus screwing up Christmas, and he takes every other Christmas off.
It's Tuesday, November 13th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So, Stu, how are you?
Everything's fine. Everything's going fine. There's no problems in America today.
Right.
Happy to report.
That's what you get. Like, you get up every morning. Alarm goes off. And you're like, everything's fine. Oh. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. What are you talking about? Everything's fine.
Do you have that moment in the morning where you sort of roll over and you bring out your phone or wherever your phone's charging and you look at it and it has the alerts on the screen?
Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of times it'll pop up. And, you know, a bunch of the news sources I have alerts set. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, Wall Street Journal or CNN or New York Times or whatever pops up. And I'm like, oh, and I see all of them. And I'm like, crap, something either terrible happened. Somebody died. There's some tragedy. Something terrible is going on. And then you have that moment where you just know today's going to suck. You know,
I have that every day.
Almost every day recently.
Yeah, I have that every day. I've stopped looking at all of the alerts. I really have.
I think it's smart to do that.
Yeah.
To get rid of the alerts.
I mean, I look at the alert. The one that set me off this morning was all of the stories that came out. This talks about the conspiracy theories that the Trump administration is floating about the Florida recount. The conspiracy theories? I got 2 points on this one. First of all, you can't be in a 2-year investigation on the corruption of our voting system and our hacking of the votes by Russia to get Donald Trump elected and then lecture me about some conspiracy theory. I think you've lost your right to do that.
That really is an amazing thing.
It's
been 2 years of them telling us that Vladimir Putin cast all the votes in the United States election in 2016. And now we have to listen to them tell us we have conspiracy theories about elections?
Right. It's crazy. The second thing is, it's the Florida recount. It's in Broward County. Do you know anything about history? First of all, this isn't the first rodeo down there. Second of all, does the phrase selected, not elected come to mind? You want to talk about conspiracy theories in the Florida election? Selected, not elected. How about that one, Democrats? How about that one, New York Times and CBS and CNN and MSNBC? You still are saying that George Bush stole that election. Please don't start with me. Oh, and if you need another one, do you remember in 2004, John Kerry only lost because the election had been hacked with all of these new electronic machine things?
And that someone was out there telling people that Democrats voted on Wednesday.
Well, I don't think we need to remind
Republicans voted on Tuesday, which is obviously, I mean, you shouldn't do things like that.
Well, I mean, if you happened to be in Ohio during the 2004 election and you saw a big waffle head that looked like John Kerry, but an enormous, it was like a 12-foot waffle, and it was telling you, Democrats vote Wednesday. You could see why so many people would believe that. Right. That's actually what they accused us. They accused us because we had a waffle head float. I love this.
That was fun.
I love this. I think it was made by the listeners, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think in conjunction with the listeners in Ohio. Yeah.
I believe I was, you know, the Koch brothers in financing that, but I had nothing to do with it at all. Don't accuse me of what are you, an anti-Semite? So we had a giant waffle head. There were times when it was saying Democrats vote to a Wednesday.
If you're taking your voting advice from a giant waffle head that's driving down a road, you probably shouldn't be voting anyway. I'll point that out. But it kind of brings you back a little bit in that the big issue of that election in 2004 was that John Kerry flipped-flopped on positions all the time. When's the last time anyone in America cared about that?
Yeah.
Like that's it seems he like was quaint.
He was a waffler.
Yeah,
he would change his mind on stuff.
Yeah, no one cares about that anymore.
No,
Hillary Clinton is like the goes from like the biggest pro. She goes, and then
you know
what?
I got to tell you something. I'm Hillary Clinton, and I have to tell you, we need to string up them gays. I love gays. Wait,
you remember?
You remember the sentence you did just before? I love them gays.
It was a foundational principle.
Yeah.
That man and woman should be married, and then, like, you know, 6 months later, she's like, oh, by the way, I'm considering dumping Bill and going into, I'm trying something new.
And we're like, all right, there you go.
No one cares.
Okay, she's a lesbian. I didn't know that, but she's apparently coming out. She is so in favor of this, she's going to try it out.
It was almost that shocking.
So I deleted my alerts today on the conspiracies.
I think that's smart. I think turning alerts off is never a bad move.
Yeah.
Because that's the phone telling you what to do. If you want to go to the phone and you want to request information, I'm glad it's there to give it to me. But when the phone is telling me what to do,
it's
that's
almost
not healthy.
Are you saying it's almost like a waffle head telling you what to do?
Yes. Yeah. Don't listen to your phone and don't listen to giant waffles driving down the street.
All right, we'll have some news for you and some updates on what's happening. Also, Kansas City, the health department, they are serious when they say don't feed the homeless people. Bureaucrats are now thinking about shutting down informal play school for two-year-olds. I think because it's too safe. And also, there's a pretty disturbing story. I'm very worried about this one. They're now saying that there are too many polar bears, and they're
amazing,
causing real havoc.
They want to go
people,
kill a bunch of them because
there's too many polar bears.
We have to go kill them.
Why don't we just let global warming? Oh, that's not working out, is it?
No.
Coming up in just a second. Also, Mr. Pat Gray joins us. Let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It is Simply Safe. Pat, you have a Simply Safe system in your home. Because you were paying like, I don't know, $900 a month in the end.
Yes.
In the end.
Yes.
They just kept
$938 a month.
No, seriously. How much was it?
$60.
And it was, didn't they raise that price on you, like double it or something?
Well, it was $32 and then they doubled it to $60.
Okay, but that's all, you know, that's understandable.
Yeah.
Doubling.
Right. I mean, they are monitoring.
Yeah, right.
You know how hard it is to monitor.
And you own the system.
Right.
You know, you can just take that system and
I don't actually own that system, but no, it stays in the house.
Really?
Still.
Yeah.
You know.
You can't take
You get
that.
To kind of lease it, sort of,
right.
in a way.
Right.
So it's really convenient.
Right. And they never go outdated at all.
No.
And then you couldn't
cut the wires.
No.
Then you'd have no protection.
Security. Okay, so here's the thing. Security systems need to be updated, and Simply Safe is on the cutting edge. I mean, this is the latest technology. You could cut the phone lines. You could lose internet. It's still going to call police or fire. You bash it with a baseball bat. This system is a great system, and you own it, and it is shockingly. Did it kind of piss you off when you found out how much this cost?
Yeah, because I wasted money for a long time.
Long time, like almost all our lives.
Yeah.
Paying and repaying, and you think that these security systems are expensive because of what you're paying. They're not. They're really not. And the monitoring, $14.95 a month. I don't know. Sounds pretty good. And right now, if you go to simplysafebeck.com, you'll get 10% off your Simply Safe system. That's simplysafebeck.com. Go there now. simplysafebeck.com. Welcome to the program. And welcome, Mr. Pat Gray. Hello, Pat.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. You?
Oh my goodness.
Right?
Yeah.
Perfect.
I was out of the farm, Sunday, and I had to move a big, huge bale of hay. For the cows, yeah. So I had to, you know, roll this big bale of hay. And little did I know, it was sitting on a fire ant hill.
Ooh.
And so it's, you know, got boils.
Oh, wow.
Got nice little boils all over my hands, which
is
really
nice. Yeah, because the bites kind of turn into that, right?
Yeah. Those are the nastiest things.
Nastiest creature on earth.
Just nasty.
Yeah.
Nasty. And they are everywhere here.
And they're almost indestructible.
Yes, they are. They are.
So,
and
I've
tried.
You could use a nuclear weapon on them, and I don't care.
Yeah.
They laugh at nuclear weapons.
Do they?
Yeah, they laugh at them.
So they're like Kim Jong-il. They're over there like, go ahead, blow it
go
all
ahead,
up.
Whatever.
I don't care.
That's fine.
Go ahead.
It'll just spread us around a little bit. I don't care about that.
So welcome to the program, Pat. What's on your mind today?
Well, hate is on my mind today.
Hate is on your mind?
I'd like to do something about the hate.
Okay. All right.
The hate has boiled over again at Kansas State.
Mm.
Kansas State police got a report on November 5th from a student who found a racist note. I mean, this is a really ugly note. And the guy who received it is Broderick Keith Burse III. He wrote, "It's 2018, and this note was posted on my apartment door."
Oh, no. Mm.
This is still happening here at K-State.
Mm.
So as
to Broderick the third,
Broderick Keith Burse the third.
I was a fan of the original, and then the sequel was okay.
Right,
was the third's
really good.
I didn't know one or two. So
yeah, you can drop
confused.
In right on three.
You can,
understand.
And it's okay.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Good.
Well, Broderick says, you know, as if it wasn't already enough to get out and vote, he refused to let this blatant racism stop him from moving forward and upward. It's commendable. What a brave
Broderick,
powerful
he is.
Man Broderick the third is.
Yeah.
See, here was the note. I mean, how ugly is this? Why do people have to do this? The note on Burse's door read, "Beware N-words, live here, knock at your own risk."
Oh my goodness.
Oh my gosh.
Beware. N-words live here.
Okay.
Knock at your own
now,
risk.
Now, this sounds like a bad note, but
the tone,
the tone that you're taking with this seems like it might not be true.
No, I'm just trying to empathize with
Broderick
III, because, I mean, I can imagine how painful that was.
Can you imagine how Broderick II would have reacted to
it?
Like,
oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God.
I think there would have been violence
Broderick II, he was, if I'm not mistaken, that's Broderick the Terrible, right?
Yes.
Broderick II.
Broderick the One is the Magnificent.
Yes.
And then two is the Terrible.
So if the Terrible had known that three, I'm guessing here, wrote the note himself.
Oh my.
Yeah.
You're getting way ahead of yourself.
Oh, am I?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't. Okay. All right, go ahead.
I mean, the Kansas State Housing and Dining Services investigated. And
not the dining service.
Dining service did an investigation.
They leave no stone unturned,
or
as you know.
Or pancake unflipped.
Yes. Right.
Right. They got it.
I mean, you've got the NSA, you got Secret Service, you have the Marines. And then probably tied with the Marines is the K-State Housing and Dining Services Force.
Right.
Elite.
So you couldn't get anything over on them. They went and investigated and asked Broderick III about this. And under intense pressure from the dining services people, he caved.
Well, he caved.
He rewrote it himself.
He caved to the dining service police.
Well, they have forks.
Wow. Well, you can't resist them.
Right.
Yeah, they have forks.
They poke you with pickle forks if you resist.
Wow.
And you can't.
That is amazing.
So he did it. Why would you write "Beware N-words live here"? Why would you do that? Why would you, yourself?
Because
are you an attention whore, or
could be too? You're trying to like influence people's votes, and
maybe
make people think that they're
there's
more racist
here, so go vote for.
Can we be honest about this? Could we be honest about this? There are racists everywhere. We're in a racist culture, so. Even if he did write it himself,
that doesn't mean
it could have been real and probably is real in somebody's heart.
Except I've never seen it real.
I've never
heard of an instance like this where it actually turned out.
This type of thing is, because I mean, again, like people marched and said Jews will not replace us in Charlottesville.
Oh, sure.
There's real
sure.
racism, obviously,
yeah.
but rarely
yeah.
do people like that put notes
right.
on people's
no.
doors at
That's
college.
That's not what they bother with.
It's just
really.
a weird
That's not
approach.
What they bother with.
Do we have reaction from Broderick Part 8, Broderick Takes Manhattan?
No, but I'm
okay.
looking for that
okay,
later on today. He's promised
yeah.
a response to this.
Okay.
Yeah, he's still working on Broderick 3 Home Alone.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, this happened just last year at K-State. Same university. Hmm. Dontarius Williams wrote the N-word all over his car in graffiti and claimed he was the victim of racism. So he writes the N-word all over his car. You've defaced your car.
So apparently
for this?
So apparently there is no real bad punishment. at K-State right. for this because...
He was not punished, and so far neither is this guy.
Right, and so it'll continue to happen because they get what they want. They get the publicity. They get their name out there. They whatever they're looking for,
they get.
And the and K-State doesn't step in and go, okay, you know what? You're expelled.
Oh, yeah.
We don't.
Right. We don't need that.
That's absolutely a.
That's what should happen. Yeah.
That is what should happen.
At least.
Would you?
I think there should be criminal charges.
I think so, too. You can't do these things.
You can't keep doing this.
Let me ask you this. If you were working with somebody and they said, you know, I just found this on my office door. Somebody just slipped this note under my door. And it said, Pat needs to be killed or whatever. Pat, you know, warning, Pat lives here and Pat's a horrible human being.
Mm-hmm.
Would you work at the company that would say, well, let me investigate it through the dining service. and then the guy who's, you know, making the slop comes up and says, no, I mean, even I got him to confess. He wrote that himself. Would you not want that guy fired?
Absolutely.
Would you feel comfortable working at a place where they just said, well, that was just a joke? No.
No.
I wouldn't.
No. Neither would Broderick Part 4, The Goblet of Fire.
it's a good one. Don't reveal too much. Okay. It hasn't come out yet. Welcome to the program. Yesterday, some news broke that actually kind of made me sad, and surprisingly, because I didn't grow up with comic books. I didn't. And I never really understood them until I had a son. And I wanted him to read, and the only thing I could get him to read early on were comic books. And so we went out and we started reading Spider-Man and, I'm trying to think of what else we read, but mainly Spider-Man is where we started. And then the movie started coming out and we really started to get into it. And then we started kind of collecting some comic books, and it's been fun with my son. And I have become such a big fan of Stan Lee because I really, truly believe he is probably the closest thing in our generation to Walt Disney. Walt Disney was a storyteller, period. And his stories were so impactful for so long that they actually helped shape America and now the world. And imagine a world without Walt Disney. No Mickey Mouse, no Disneyland, no Disney World, none of the Disney movies. Imagine our childhood without Mary Poppins and without all of these things that we all grew up on as staples. I think Stan Lee is that guy for this generation. And his characters were endless and so well written and so well thought out. He created his own universe. And it's remarkable what he did. Yesterday was kind of a sad day, but in a good way. When Walt Disney died, nobody understood his plans. Nobody understood his vision of where he was going next. Luckily, people do understand, and they respect his vision. And the Marvel Universe will continue to expand long after his death. Brad Meltzer, who is the author of many children's books and really great novels as well, is with us. His new book out, I Am Neil Armstrong. I thought of you, Brad, when I saw this yesterday, because I know at least you're a big DC comic fan. I assume that you're also a Stan Lee fan.
Oh, Quinn, listen, I knew Stan. When I started researching my book about the creation of Superman, I did a book called The Book of Lies many years ago. Everyone said, you got to talk to Stan Lee. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's Marvel and this is DC. But he knew Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, who created Superman. They were all kids at the same time. They were young, 17-year-old kids gave us Superman, teenagers from Cleveland, Ohio. And Stan Lee was this Jewish kid from, you know, from New York, who was Stan Lieber was his name. And what they were telling, as you said so eloquently, is the same story that Walt Disney gave us. It wasn't just the story of a mouse or the story of Spider-Man. It was the story of us. It was the American dream that he was giving us. And Walt Disney's era, he gave us innocence at a time when we needed it and wanted it so desperately. And Stan Lee certainly gave, you know, co-created Spider-Man and the X-Men and Hulk and Iron Man and all these characters we know and love. But what he gave me personally was a creed to live by, principles to honor, and the way to behave toward other people, that you should be good as opposed to being bad. And I think that that, to me, is his greatest legacy, is that we could, you know, the reason those lessons are so powerful is because we can use his lessons to this very day. You know, no corporation or advertising or politician stands for good for good's sake. Stan Lee, yes, he made money years later, but not at the start. I mean, he wrote those heroes that were just doing good because you had to do good. That was better than anything else. And, man, we need that today. Look where the country is today. We need that again. If you know, we're great at fighting. We learned how to fight. But when you're fighting for yourself and you're fighting for power, or you're fighting for money, you've already lost. And I would much rather honor Stan Lee's stories where the characters fight because it's just the right thing to do.
So, Brad, I've really been taken by the fact that Spider-Man and all of these, you know, Captain America, all these heroes came at a time when people felt powerless. You know, World War II and then the Cold War, those were frightening times for people because they didn't feel they had control over the their life, really. It could be taken by a foreign power and a menace that was so far beyond evil with the Nazis that they couldn't get their arms around it. And then with the Cold War, the same thing, devices that they just, that you're defenseless against a nuclear missile. And they were at their peak at that point. And then they kind of fell, you know, to a normal level. And then when we need these heroes again, and when heroes are gone and we feel like we don't have any power over our life, we go back to Stan Lee stories and we're looking for those heroes, superheroes. But as you said, also heroes just because they stand to do the right thing.
And that's exactly, I mean, that is the history of the superhero and any popular culture entertainment movement. We've talked about it before. If you look at the Great Depression, the characters that America favored were Tarzan and Flash Gordon. They were characters designed to transport you elsewhere. The Depression was depressing. So you wanted to go to the 25th century and the jungles of Tarzan. And as you said, when World War II came, we're scared as a country. We're terrified. World War II is encroaching on our shores, and here comes a character named Superman to save us. It sells a million copies. No one understands why. I know why. Because we needed someone at that moment. You show me a great need at any moment in history, and that's when you don't get the hero you want. You get the hero you need. And if you look after 9/11, when everyone said, we'll never laugh again, we'll never joke again, the first big movie that broke through the public consciousness was Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And why? Because we were a country. We weren't a country of Superman anymore. We weren't invincible and thought we could beat everyone. We were a country of Spider-Man. We felt like we were vulnerable, but we still wanted to give it everything we had to fight back, everything we had to do right. And it's why 16 years after 9/11, we still are here today with the superhero movie boom, where even the terrible ones are making over $100 million. Why? Because we're still a country starving for heroes and looking for good ones. And I, again, that's not just because we like people punching Dr. Octopus in the face. It's because we need it. We need it so badly.
You would think that Hollywood would get that, and they would... it would translate into other hero stories, but they don't seem to get it. I mean, if you look at what the big movies are, it's always a superhero. Also, these really spectacular stories about real life heroes in war. They got that in the Depression and in the Second World War. They just don't seem to connect with that now. Let me ask you about superheroes. Stan Lee's superheroes generally have issues. All of them have weaknesses, and it's not just kryptonite. It's that they are real people. Well, you know, Thor is not, but You know, you even look at Iron Man.
But even Thor had Donald Blake, who was this crippled alter ego. But you hit it right. That's the right answer. Is, you know, DC gave us what they used to call the lowercase g gods. You know, yes. They were invulnerable. They were American icons. They weren't human. They were superhuman.
Right.
And then Stan Lee and Jack Kirby came along in the Marvel Universe and said, let's make them like us. And Spider-Man, you know, it was his fault that
correct
his uncle got killed.
Right.
It was literally the blame was on him. The guilt was his own. And Iron Man was, you know, someone who was a drunk and could care less about the world and,
correct,
you know, thought he was rich and everything was solved. He was self-centered. And Thor was banished from Asgard. The original origin is because he became so full of himself. Odin said, I'm going to make you a human being. And suddenly the Marvel Universe came and gave everyone the best story of all, our own story. There's nothing better. The greatest stories, whether it's biblical or Superman or Spider-Man, but the greatest stories in the whole universe are not the stories about other people. They're the stories that tell us something about ourselves. That's why the Bible is written in story. It's not written with just, you know, here's the Ten Commandments and then here's all the list of things to do. They're certainly embedded in there, but they're all told in story because there's nothing more powerful than an idea. And all the story is all those ideas knitted together like a raft.
I'm trying to
carry other people.
I'm trying to remember the guy who studied heroes wrote, what is it? Hero of a Thousand Faces, or, but he's the guy who helped George Lucas put together Star Wars. And he talks about all of the heroes of the Bible and this and all of the legends around the world. And they all just do kind of boil down to the best ones are the ones that are
right, the hero's journey. And
right.
They have different, each one is a different archetype. And
correct.
And Stan Lee was, you know, he was the man, you know, Stan Lee was a great storyteller who was also a master salesman. That's what he and Walt Disney had in common. Great storyteller, also a master salesman. But the reason they were so powerful is they embedded those heroes with the side, with that sprinkling of us. And you know, I think I actually brought, this was one of Stan Lee's soapboxes. He used to write them in the back of his comic books. And everyone always says, you know, why they take heroes today and make them all about, you know, issues. And they were always about issues. They were always about what the world was dealing with.
Yeah.
And Stan Lee, these are his words, if it's okay to read it.
Yeah.
And he says, let's lay it right on the line. Bigotry and racism are among the deadliest social ills plaguing the world today. And he's like, but unlike a team of costumed supervillains, they can't be halted with a punch in the face. And he says, and this is the most important part, the only way to destroy them, those racists out there, is to expose them, to reveal them for the insidious evils they really are. The bigot is an unreasoning hater, one who hates blindly, fanatically, indiscriminately. If his hang-up is black men, he hates all black men. If a redhead offended him, he hates all redheads. If some foreign beast beat him to a job, he's down on all foreigners. He hates people he's never seen, people he's never known, with equal intensity, with equal venom. And he says that, you know, only if man is ever to be worth his destiny, we must fill our hearts with tolerance. For then and only then will we be truly worthy of the concept that man was created in the image of God, a God who calls all his children. That was in a comic book back in the 60s. That's Stan Lee writing. And that's where the Black Panther came from. And that's where the X-Men came from, is, you know, all these people out there that he spoke for and that said, yeah, I need help. It was a civil rights movement. It was, you know, the X-Men was always an allegory for African-Americans who were different and hated for being different. And I love that he took all those issues on full force.
Yeah, Brad, you posted a bunch of these yesterday on Twitter, and it was amazing to read that because I'm not a big comic book fan per se. But looking at that and comparing it to the sort of entertainment that is now pushed to young people, it's like Stan Lee's messages were all he was fighting against things that were overtly bad and fighting for things that were overtly good. And now we have a situation where, you know, things like, you know, promiscuity and anti-God messages and anti-American messages are so prevalent in so much of the entertainment today. I really found that to be a stark contrast.
No, listen, not just entertainment. Look at our politics. It's our entire world. You know, I feel like in a strange, odd way, and I appreciate you reading those. They were so vital to understand, is we've just become a culture that fights well. But we are not a culture that speaks well to each other, that tolerates each other, that looks at differences and sees something that, you know, we all have the same things in common. We all want to be safe. We want a loving family. We want to love and be loved. All of us. I don't care who you are. Everyone out there that is your opposite political view has hopes and dreams, and they have the same ones you do. And I love that Stan Lee could use his soapbox to put those messages out there. And he just did it. He just, you know, put them all into costumes, and the message got to us. So, and it gets to us today.
Brad, I've got to take a quick break, but I want to ask you one thing about Stan Lee personally. Can you hang on for just a second?
Yep.
Okay, good. Back with something that I don't know. I'd like to know how his end of his life was. I've read some things that are really quite sad, and I hope they're not true. We'll talk to Brad Meltzer about that in a second. First, let me tell you about FilterBuy. FilterBuy is our sponsor this half hour, and they will help you with your furnace or your air conditioning. You're turning on your furnace for the first time. You know, I did last night. Have you turned on the furnace yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, did last night. You know, maybe you should check the air filter if your system has failed. The air filter, costly mistake, completely avoidable by, you know, regularly replacing the air filters at FilterBuy.com, America's leading provider for HVAC filters for homes and small businesses. Now, you can choose from, you know, 600 sizes. They're all made here in America. They can custom make them for you if you want within 24 hours. And they're all delivered to you. Now, if you're like me and you constantly need the reminder, I don't want to go out and buy the air filters. Can you just deliver them when I'm supposed to change them? I'll see them on my front step, and then I'll go change it. That's what they have. And you save 5% now for subscribing to auto replacement, and you'll never forget to change your air filters again. All orders are shipped free within 24 hours. Save 5% when you subscribe. Much easier than going to the store. Get it now at filterbuy.com. That's filterbuy.com. Brad Meltzer, you know, I've been following Stan Lee's life here in the last couple of months, and it didn't seem like he was having a good go of it. He had problems with his daughter. He had problems with the two business partners he had sued for $1 billion. His wife had just passed away, 69 years of marriage. Was he happy in the end, do you think?
You know, the last I heard from him, he was actually very kind to me when the last Thriller came out and promoted it. And, you know, he always had a smile on his face. I obviously heard the same story as you did. I spoke to his office yesterday. I have a dear friend who works with him and said, "How are you all doing?" I think some of the things we heard were true and some weren't. And I think the biggest devastation was the loss of his wife. Yeah. You know what? To make it 69 years and go out at 95, I feel like we should all have such problems.
Yeah.
That's a life to emulate. So I'm choosing the Stan Lee route and choosing to see the better side of it rather than focus on what clearly were a rough 6 months.
Thank you very much, Brad. I really, really appreciate it. 69 years he was married to his wife. That was the nice thing, that they were finally together only after a separation of a year and a half. Stan Lee and his wife back together again. All right, let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. We are so grateful to have Relief Factor. Not only is a sponsor, but I am grateful myself for having Relief Factor.
I'm grateful, too, because I had to deal with you before you took
it. Shut up.
And it was awful. Now that you take it, at least you're only moderately unpleasant.
You know, if you ever get to a point to where you can't open a jar or you can't open a bottle top because the pain is too bad.
Yeah.
You know, especially as a man, it plays with you, and it plays with you hard. Just playing with your grandkids. If you can't play with your kids or your grandkids because of pain, would you please try Relief Factor? 100% drug-free, created by doctors. 4 key ingredients that help your body fight against inflammation, where most of our pain comes from. It's worked for me. Please try it. Relief Factor. Order their 3-week quick start. You're out $20 if it doesn't work, but 70% of those who try it for 3 weeks, it works, and they order month after month. ReliefFactor.com.
Glenn Beck.
All right. There are some important things going on in the world, but we don't seem to care about those anymore. But there is one thing that I think you're going to start hearing in the media, and it is possible to, you know, spiral out of control into something much, much bigger and broader. You're going to hear from probably all the media and multiple world leaders and maybe even the glorified UN. They're going to say this: Israel attacks Gaza. The IDF has launched multiple airstrikes aimed at the poor Palestinians. And now, is Israel planning on invading? It's the same old song and dance, and people actually have the balls to call me an anti-Semite for criticizing George Soros. These are the same media outlets, world leaders, that will actually call Donald Trump an inciter of anti-Semitism. Forget the fact that he moved the U.S. embassy into Jerusalem. As you know, it's crazy, but that's the capital of Israel. And he also scuttled the Iran deal. They love him in Israel. They'll prop up people like President Obama for giving real anti-Semites, people like the Ayatollah Khomeini. They gave him billions of dollars that literally had no other purpose for that money other than to go and kill Jews. That's how that money was used. The world has gone completely and absolutely insane. Now, here's what's really going on in Israel. It's kind of long, but let me quote this from the Hamas charter because it says everything. I want to point out that Hamas is a terrorist organization. And anyone who says you can have peace with Hamas doesn't know who Hamas is and who Hamas says they are. This is their charter. The Islamic Resistance Movement believes that the land Israel, Palestine, is an Islamic land consecrated for future Muslim generations until Judgment Day. It or any part of it shall not be squandered. It nor any part of it should be given up. Neither a single Arab country nor all Arab countries, neither any king or president, nor all the kings and presidents, neither any organization nor all of them, be they Palestine or Arab, possess the right to give this land away. So anybody who says, well, you know, the Jews, they're just using the Bible. They're just saying it's some Bible. It's a religious thing. What do you think this means? Palestine is Islamic land consecrated for Muslim generations until Judgment Day. Initiatives and so-called peaceful solutions and international conferences are in contradiction to the principles of the Islamic Resistance Movement, Hamas. Gee, I wonder how good of a partner they're going to be at the negotiating table. There is no peace. Forget about justice. There is no peace. Justice for them is the destruction of Israel, and they will pursue that regardless of whether the international community tries to broker a peace deal or not. It will never stop. Hamas wants Israel destroyed simply for existing. They want Jews dead simply for being alive. That is the plain truth. Read their charter. Now, here's what's happening. Over the last 72 hours, over 400 rockets have been fired by Hamas into Israel. Rockets fired directly at Jewish civilians. Now, this is the largest escalation of rocket fire Hamas has ever done. They shoot at Israeli civilians, and then they hide behind Palestinian civilians. So how do you get a terror organization, you know, how are they getting a pass with a global community? Well, who but an actual anti-Semite would justify the killings of Jews by terrorists? This is hurtling towards a much larger conflict. Remember, this involves Russia, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Iran. The IDF is moving additional troops and armor to the border now. A limited ground invasion is possible. Will Hezbollah join in the fight from Lebanon? It is possible. Will the Iranian troops that have been setting up shop in Syria join in as well? It is all possible. I had somebody in my office yesterday. He was a Jewish businessman. He said, I was in Israel a few years ago. And he said, I saw people wearing these T-shirts everywhere, said Glenn Beck. and restoring courage. He said, what was that all about? I said, I have this gift and this burden sometimes that I can see the direction that the world is going. I'm bad at timing, but I see the direction. And I wanted my children and I wanted my audience to make a decision of who they would be as the world hurtles again towards nightmares. Because anti-Semitism, when Marxism is on the rise, anti-Semitism is always on the rise. When banks go down, anti-Semitism is always on the rise. I've said this to you recently, but I want you to hear it again. The things that I have talked about, the things that I have said you have to prepare for, and they're going to be tough times, but we're going to make it because we're going to make it together. And you have to be prepared to know who you are. Those times are now here. They're upon us. And if you haven't started preparing mentally and spiritually and physically, you need to. You need to. Because we're not going to find leaders at the UN. And we're not going to find leaders in Washington. And you know what? Those leaders are not going to be the ones the people turn to anyway. We're going to be turning to each other. And that's really our choice. Are we going to turn on each other or will we turn to each other? Prayers for Israel and prayers for the Palestinian people who are being used by, I think, evil forces. But prayers for all of them. Prayers for peace.
It's Tuesday, November 13th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Jason Buttrill is with us now, and Jason has been following Israel and has been talking to sources on the ground. Can you tell me the other side of this, Jason, is that Israel had some sort of a botched incursion or something that they were doing over the weekend that kind of caused all this? What did they do?
Over the weekend, I've had a hard time with the people that I know in Israel actually getting a straight story on this, and frankly, I don't think we're going to get a straight story on this because it sounded like one of your like SEAL Team 6 type, you know, operations mm-hmm. going on. But over the weekend, appeared to be either a surveillance op gone bad or possibly even a snatch and grab gone bad. But it was across the border in the Gaza Strip, and an IDF Special Forces team got into a shootout with a high-level Hamas operative. The Hamas operative was killed. One IDF colonel, a lieutenant colonel, was also killed with another IDF soldier wounded. They made it back across the border. But this kind of like sparked this entire, you know, thing that we're seeing now. Over the last 24 hours, as you just pointed out, over 400 rockets. We're getting closer to 500 rockets. Now, I want you to keep that in mind, everyone listening. Almost 500 rockets in around 24 hours, which was basically nonstop aerial bombardment. Now, Glenn, you've been to some of these villages. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a whole lot of nothing out there. And then some of these small villages, a lot of people crammed into these small villages. There's children. You know, there's preschools in these schools, and they have bomb shelters. This is not how preschoolers should live.
So I lived, when I went over and visited, I went to, I think it was Sorot, and it is a small little village right by the border. And they had these, they were like little, houses, very, very small little rooms all across the playground. And they were bomb shelters. And they were places that if you heard the sirens go off, you have no time to run into a building and down the stairs. You don't have time to get off the playground. So all over the playground were these little safe shelters that, you know, here's the hopscotch and five steps away is a bomb shelter. Over here is where you're playing kickball and five steps away is a bomb shelter because you don't have time to run from one end of the playground to the other. That's how close they are. And they're just, well,
here. Over 100 civilians so far, as you're bringing up that bomb, have been accepted into hospitals in those areas.
That's the one that fell by us when we were there. And it was given to me by, I think, the vice mayor or the mayor of Surat. When I was there, when I left, he said, by the way, we dug this out for you. This is the one that fell by us. And they're falling all the time,
And it's hard to describe what it's like. This is a dumb weapon. It's just fired. It's dumb, but it's more terrifying. And I've been shot at by one of those a couple of trips ago when I was in Iraq. They're dumb weapons, and they just fire them, and you hear this like horrific scream going through the air, and you don't know where it's going to land.
Right.
They're not targeting something specific. They're targeting an area, hopefully. So you don't know. Once you hear that, you just put yourself in the position of an Israeli living in Sderot. You hear that scream going over the air. There is a very large possibility it hits your area. Just no one knows where it's going to go. It's not on a direct path to anything. It is terrifying. It is frightening. But like I just said, around 100 people have been admitted to a hospital in a hospital that I'm in contact with in that area. Around 100, just in that hospital.
By the way, so you know, Mercury One has done an awful lot of work for Israel. And we have provided them with these little mini, it's like a little ambulance, except we train people to be EMS, and they can't get the ambulance there fast enough. And so there's these people that are trained EMS, and they just get an alert. It's almost like Uber. And, you know, they have these little bikes, these motorcycles that have everything in them, and they can get to a bomb site within minutes anywhere in the country. And that's through Mercury One. And we would ask, if you want to make a difference in the world, please join us at mercuryone.org. So tell me what you think. How likely is this to spread with Hezbollah and Iran?
Well, I think first we should clarify what Hamas, what they've been saying in the past, let's say, hour or so. They've been saying that they're looking at a ceasefire. They're open to a ceasefire. But as of about 5 minutes, my friends in Israel on the border there have said that the sirens are still going off. The rockets are still being fired. And the IDF basically said, look, as long as you guys are shooting off rockets, we're gonna keep, you know, targeting Hamas targets. So it doesn't look like it's stopping anytime soon. Now, there are elements. So the entire reason why Iran has been pushing their troops into Syria, why they've also established a foothold in Lebanon with Hezbollah, they're trying to encircle Israel. And so what they're looking for, they're playing the long game, which is a game of encirclement, which is a game of attrition. They have more people. Israel has less. It's a game of numbers. The more, if one of these of borders kicks off and it gives them justification to actually initiate that plan, which you have seen the videos that we've both looked at and listened to, that is their plan. That is their goal. If one of those situations spirals out of control, the rest of them, there's a very strong possibility that they could all engage at the same time. Now, again, one country or one border going against Israel, Israel is going to mop the floor with them. The only time when Israel is going to be in bad shape, and again, the Ayatollah knows this, Hezbollah, the leader of Hezbollah knows this, they all know this, is that once multiple borders, this is the same thing with Nasser did, you know, back in the day with the Arab Republic. They wanted to get everybody, Jordan, everybody, Egypt, all of them going at once. If you can envelop Israel, that's when they are vulnerable. So it depends on how strong this incursion gets. If Israel does do a land incursion and they do get bogged down in that one area, I would not be at all surprised to see Iran start launching from Syria again and for Hezbollah to push down from Lebanon. We'll just have to sit back and watch.
That's when it'll be game on.
That's when it'll be game
on. Because Israel will not stand for it. They will use every weapon that they have to stop it. Please continue to follow it and say hi to our friends in Israel. And if you happen to be listening to us over in Israel, We love you. And we are not the people that we were in the 1930s. And there are millions of us that know the truth and will stand for Israel. And we stand with you today. Thanks, Jason. All right. Our sponsor this half hour is LifeLock. In the hands of an identity thief, your Social Security number could lead to all kinds of problems. So you have to be smart with your Social Security number. You memorize it. You keep your card in a safe place. I mean, I remember thinking, you know, how this whole identity theft stuff, you know, back in the, what, 80s when they started this, 90s? I thought, this is ridiculous. Now, it absolutely, you have to have everything buttoned up. Everything. I mean, your kids have a Social Security card. When, you know, when they're born, they get, they're issued a Social Security number. They're huge. They're a huge target. Now, we do things that can expose ourselves, especially like shopping during the holidays. That is the season of taking for cyber criminals. That's why LifeLock is there to protect you. Now they also have the power of Norton Security to protect you against the threats to your identity and your devices. So if you have a problem, they have the agents who are going to work to fix it. If you have a problem, they're going to notify you because you're going to most likely miss it. No one can prevent all identity theft or cybercrime or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock with Norton Security will give you the peace of mind. I want you to go to LifeLock.com and use the promo code Beck. Get an extra 10% off your first year, plus an additional $25 Amazon gift card with annual enrollment. That'll help you out for the holidays, and it will keep you safe at this most dangerous time of the year. That's promo code Beck at 1-800-LIFELOCK, 1-800-LIFELOCK, or lifelock.com. Terms and conditions do apply. You know, I have to compliment you. Mercury One is a charity that is not getting big donations from people. I mean, we are a nickel and dime kind of organization. And we have raised and given this aid out. I don't even know how many tens of millions of dollars, 50, 60, I have no idea. But I just said, you know, Mercury One is helping in Israel right now. We are in North Carolina from the hurricane. We're still in Florida. We're still in Texas.
In Houston, yeah.
In Houston. We still have operations going on there. We're in California with the wildfires. That's not to say all of the, you know, women shelters and other organizations that we supply help to. We're in Iraq. We're in Syria. Yeah. We're in
Central and South America, right, with the slavery stuff.
Yes, mm-hmm. And Asia on that. We're in, where is it? I want to say it's not Bali. Burma.
Burma.
We're in mm-hmm. Burma mm-hmm. as well, in Haiti as well. I mean,
it's interesting.
This is only this audience.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. All these tragedies are going on, and Mercury One's at all of them. I mean, can you make the argument they're causing them? Can you look at it the
no,
other way?
No, you know, I've never looked at that. We should probably look into that.
We should make sure who got there first.
Yeah, right.
Did the hurricane arrive in North Carolina, or did Mercury One? I want to know.
Well, we do have that weather machine. It's remarkable, and I want to thank you for giving to Mercury One.
It is amazing. I mean, what other audience does this? By the way, with absolutely no recognition from anybody.
Yeah.
There's never been all the celebrities who get on TV and get praised for whatever they're doing. Never is this audience recognized for all the millions and millions of dollars and all the good that has been done.
No.
And of course, obviously, that's not why they're doing it, right? That's
right.
Not why this audience does this. I mean, this is...
We don't seek that out.
No.
We don't seek that out.
But if you did, they wouldn't give it to you anyway.
I know.
So
they would make it into something bad anyway.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
Anyway, would you do us a favor? Could you buy a raffle ticket for Mercury One? It helps us keep our doors open. We pay our bills every year through this fundraiser. It's a raffle ticket. You could win a brand new Mercedes, and you're giving $100 to charity. MercuryOne.org. Go there, buy a raffle ticket today. We're closing this
Glenn,
out as of Friday.
Beck. Mercury.
Next hour, we hope to hear from Marco Rubio about Florida and... somebody will be joining us from the UK to tell us what's happening there. An act of cowardice that is beyond understanding. and should come as a surprise and a warning to all of us about our ally, the United Kingdom. That's coming up in just about a half hour from now.
So the New York Times has a thing out from their upshot section of their website, which has a lot of really interesting things. Even if you don't like the Times coverage on other topics, they're pretty interesting there because it's a lot of their data stuff. And then it's not all politics, though. They have kind of a really cool poll that they came out with, which is judging by the way you refer to certain things, they can pinpoint where you're from and where your area of influence is. Like, if you say, like, for example, the first question is, how would you address a group of two or more people? Is it you all, yous, you lot, you guys, youans, yins, you, or y'all?
Or yeah, it's you guys.
You guys. Mm. That's that. I think that was the same one. And they go through a bunch of this like this, and they can show you a map, a heat map of where mm-hmm. you were from.
Yins is Pittsburgh, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think it's Pittsburgh, yeah. Right? What do you call a big road in which you drive relatively fast? You want to just give me your guesses before I read all of them, or you want to just...
No, read them all.
Okay. Highway, freeway, parkway, turnpike, expressway.
Freeway.
Freeway.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm highway on that.
Yeah, freeway.
What do you call rubber-soled shoes worn in gym class for athletic activities? Sneakers, shoes, gym shoes, sand shoes, jumpers, tennis shoes, running shoes, runners, trainers. I have no word for this.
I think we used to call them tennis shoes. I grew up with tennis shoes, I think.
I went with sneakers. That was my that was my
sneakers
world.
Sneakers or tennis shoes. But I think I used to, when I was growing up, I think tennis shoes.
Tennis shoes, by the way, seems to be the most popular.
Is it?
Which is bizarre to me. It's only the Northeast really is sneakers, which is what I, you know, that's where I'm from. Next up, what do you call the large wild cat native to the Americas? Mountain lion, cougar, puma, mountain cat, panther, catamount, mountain screamer. What kind of weird town is that? And painter. I want to know mountain screamer. That just sounds like a terrifying world. What'd you say, mountain lion?
Mountain lion.
All right. Next up, do you pronounce cot, C-O-T, and C-A-U-G-H-T the same?
Cot, yes.
Cot and caca.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Same.
How would you pronounce
cot? The... Cot and caught.
Oh yeah.
That's cot. how I would say it.
Cot.
Cot as you lay down in a cot.
I don't know. I'm horrible with.
And you're caught with the girl that you're laying down with in a cot.
Yeah, no, I would say cot, just the same.
Okay. What do you call a drive through liquor store? I love this. Brew through, party barn, bootlegger, beer barn, beverage barn. We have these in my area, but I have no special term for them. I've never heard of such a thing.
I would say, growing up, I would never have heard such a thing, and then I'm an alcoholic, and so I don't go to the...
Well, but they're around here. There are some here in Texas, I believe.
I don't know. I don't even see them. A party barn? I don't know.
Well, if you would say, I've never heard of such a thing, or we have them in my area, but I have no special term for them.
Yeah, we have them in our area.
That's what I answered that one the same way, by the way. Yeah. I don't remember ever seeing one when I was a kid, but like now I know they're familiar with them.
Yeah,
but I
know what they are, but
What do you call the small road parallel to the highway? Frontage road, service road, access road, feeder road, gateway. We have them, but I don't have a word. I've never heard of this concept or other.
We have them, but I had not heard of them. Well, it's hard because I mean, I didn't grow up with them, so I don't.
Well, how would you say, if I was going to ask you, what is that road right now? What would you say?
I would say that's the access road, but I think that's Texas.
Okay. Access.
The first time I ever saw those were Texas.
Yeah, it does look like, yeah, Texas does seem like to be the place for that.
Yeah.
I think I said service. I can't remember which one I said. How do you pronounce A-U-N-T?
That's an ant.
Ant. To sound like ant. There's a bunch of different ideas on there, but I'll skip that. Do you call the sweet spread that is put on cake frosting or icing?
Frosting.
Frosting. Okay. What do you call it when rain falls while the sun is shining?
I don't know. See, this is really hard for me because I've lived all over the country, and when I was doing local radio, I had to adopt the language of the area, or I sounded like an outsider. So I don't even know anymore, because my father used to say icing the cakes. I'm icing the cakes. So I think it was icing and not frosting. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's just what you would say now, because you're the interesting test case here,
because I think if this is going to get something wrong, it's going to be you. A, you're all over the country. You've lived all over the country. B, you're a broadcaster, so you're not going to pick up as many. You're a national broadcaster, right? Yeah. So you're not going to pick up as many of the local things that most people would. You're not going to hold on to those.
Frosting. I just think even frosting. I don't.
What do you call it when rain falls while the sun is shining? Sun shower. Listen, I got to give you. The wolf is giving birth is one of them.
Where do you live if that's what you say? Wolf giving birth.
How about this one? The devil is beating his wife? What kind of dark place do you live in?
Afghanistan caves. Okay.
A monkey's wedding. These are all the real choices. Fox's wedding, pineapple rain, liquid sun.
Liquid sun. I remember that.
I don't remember liquid sun. Scientifically, that is not what it is, just in case you're worried about that. So you go sun shower. That's what I would go with, too. These are different, by the way, than some other ones.
But I think I actually grew up with liquid sun.
Really?
Yeah. Go ahead.
What do you call the night before Halloween? Gate night, trick night, mischief night, cabbage night, goosey night, devil's eve. I have no word for this or other.
I have no word for that.
Really? Yeah. I'm 100% mischief night when I was a kid.
Yeah.
That's what everyone called it. What do you call a sweetened carbonated beverage? Soda.
Soda.
Pop.
No, wait. Pop.
Coke. Tonic. Soft drink.
Gosh.
Lemonade.
Oh. Okay, so.
Coca-Cola. Fizzy drink. Dope.
So
I think you guys are drinking something else.
So this is something strange. I've never seen this. Coke is what I used to call everything. It was weird. You would go into a store and you'd say, I like a Coke. Okay. 7-Up, please. You would order
that one. Is insane to me. I feel like
it was like the word. It's like Kleenex.
I don't want to insult the audience, but that if you say that, you're crazy.
This is the first time I've ever seen this.
Because I don't understand that one. Coke is a brand of soda. I have a Coke. That'll be a root beer. What? No, it's soda root beer. Pop, I can understand. I had soda when I was young. I can't understand dope.
I would say Coke. I would say Coke just because I haven't thought of that in years, but it took me a while to break that.
Coke. As all soda, you call Coke.
Coke.
That's interesting. What do you call... we've had this conversation before. How do you pronounce the second syllable of P-A-J-A-M-A-S?
Pajamas.
Pajamas.
Yeah.
With a vowel in jam.
Yeah.
I would go with the vowel in palm. Pajamas.
It's so East Coasty. I was speaking to my aunt about her pajamas.
That's exactly how I'd say both of those.
Yes, exactly right.
It's called class.
Yes.
What do you call the insect that flies around in the summer and glows in the dark? Lightning bug. Firefly. I use lightning bug and firefly interchangeably. A peeny wally. Now, I think you went into the wrong place if you're talking peeny wally, but I don't know. I don't know what a peeny wally is. It sounds like something else.
I'd say firefly.
Firefly. I think that's what I would go with, too. What do you call something that is across both streets from you at an intersection or diagonally across from you in general? Kitty corner, kitta corner, catter corner, catty corner.
Catty corner.
Catty, C-A-T-T-Y.
Mm-hmm. Catty corner.
Kitty cross, kitty wampus, or diagonal. You said catty corner. See, I would say kitty corner for that.
That's catty corner. Yeah, catty corner.
Interesting. This one I had an
catty
absolute...
Catty wampus was also, I remember.
That's an interesting one. Catty corner, by the way, mostly southeast. So, again, not where you're from.
Huh.
What would you call... I had an absolute answer to this one.
Catty wampus?
I can only see the one you answered with it goes like that. What would you call a sale of unwanted items on your porch or in
garage
your yard?
Garage sale.
Garage sale. I would say tag sale. 100% tag sale.
I know.
Which I guess is a Connecticut thing.
It is.
But yard sale, rummage sale, thrift sale, stoop sale, carport sale, sidewalk sale, jumble.
No.
Garage car sale. Boot or a patio sale are the other options. Okay. What do you call a traffic jam caused by drivers slowing down to look at an accident?
Rubbernecking.
Let me give you one other qualifier on this one, because there's a bunch of looky-loo. Gapers delay, gawk block. But this one was, this is kind of when I read all the options. Rubbernecking is the activity, slowing down and gawking, that causes the traffic jam, but I have no word for the traffic jam itself. That's the one I went with, because I would say people were rubbernecking at something.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You would agree with that one? Okay. I'm going to change it to that. All right. Next up, what do you call the long sandwich that contains cold cuts, lettuce, and so on? Sub, grinder, hoagie, hero, poor boy, bomber, Italian sandwich, baguette, sarnie, or I have no word for this other.
Read them again.
Sub, grinder, hoagie, hero.
Okay, so I think, I don't remember now. I mean, I would say sub instinctively.
Yes.
But it may have been grinder.
Grinder, I feel like, was in Connecticut a lot, too.
Okay, so that may have been there.
They also had wedge, which is not even on this list.
No.
Which I thought was interesting. Okay, sub?
Sub.
Okay, sub. How do you pronounce the first syllable of L-A-W-Y-E-R? Say that word.
Lawyer.
Loy, so rhymes with boy.
Yes.
Some people say
lawyer.
Rhymes with flaw. So lawyer. I don't even know.
It's a lawyer.
It's a lawyer. And that's the way the word's pronounced.
Yeah, what the hell's
Get used to it, America.
Lawyer.
What do you call the area of grass in the middle of some streets?
Give me options.
Options. Boulevard, midway, traffic island, neutral ground. I have no word for this. Median or other.
Median.
Median or other. Okay. I said island. I feel like I would call it the island. I don't know why.
It's a sad vacation trip for you.
I'm going to the island, everybody. What do you call a large motor vehicle used to carry freight? A semi truck, tractor trailer, trailer truck, transfer truck,
transport. Semi-truck.
Semi-truck?
Semi-truck, semi-truck.
Let me go. Semi-trailer, truck and trailer, 18-wheeler. 18-wheeler is one I could put up there, too.
I know.
Truck, rig, or a lorry?
No.
L-O-R-R-Y. I think I went with tractor trailer there, but I could have gone 18-wheeler, too.
I think I could go semi-truck or 18-wheeler.
All right.
How much more do we have?
We've got a couple more.
Quick.
How do you pronounce C-R-A-Y-O-N?
What is it?
C-R-A-Y-O-N.
Crayon.
Crayon. Let's see. With one syllable rhyme, crayon. Okay, there we go. What do you call the area of grass between sidewalk and road? Berm, parking, tree lawn, terrace, curb strip, beltway, verge. I have no word for this. I had no word for that either. What do you call the traffic situation in which several roads meet in a circle? Rotary, roundabout, circle, traffic circus. What? Oh, I'm going out of the traffic circus. What do you got? Rotary, traffic circle?
Rotary, but we didn't have any of those.
Okay.
So the first time I ever saw one, I think I was in Massachusetts.
What do you call an easy high school or college class? Gut, crypt course, crip course, bird, blow off, meat, or other?
Nothing. Other, I don't know.
Other.
I don't, none of those sound familiar.
All right. Let's see. It says you are from Arizona. And you did. You know, you did work in Arizona
for a while.
In a formative year?
But you know what?
Your early 20s,
You know what? I bet you Arizona, because Arizona is kind of like Florida for the East Coast. Arizona, a lot of people from Chicago to Seattle.
All kind of converge.
All kind of converge down there. So I bet I have a little bit of everything, which I think Arizona
and
probably
it
is.
Definitely think you're a West Coast person.
Yeah.
So it does not think you are from, you know, North Carolina.
Yeah.
It knows that.
It's probably
interesting.
I'm guessing that's what Arizona is. It's just a hodgepodge of a lot of places in the West.
I tweeted this at World of Stew. We'll tweet it from Glenn Beck as well, if you want to take this. It's pretty interesting. It actually narrows it down. It's nailed pretty much all of us. You were the hardest one, I thought. And it still came up with something, I think, pretty close.
All right. Liberty Safe is our sponsor this half hour, the number one safe manufacturer in the nation. They are the best, bar none. They have sold more than 2 million safes, and they've done it for a reason. I mean, when you go into a Cabela's, that's a Liberty Safe. In fact, I think the last I heard, they were going to take the name Cabela's off because Liberty is now a bigger name than Cabela's when it comes to safes. But it is the Cabela's goes and they have Liberty make their safes because they are the best. And they have the military style locking bars. They have heat expanding fire seals, second to none. That's really important. Also, their full side safes come with a lifetime warranty. It's an unbeatable product, whether you're protecting your papers, your valuables, your guns. You need a safe, and Liberty Safe is the one that you really want. They even offer a 12-month interest-free financing on approved credit. Check out all of their special deals right now at libertysafe.com. Invest in Liberty. Invest in a Liberty Safe. libertysafe.com.
Glenn Beck.
There's a woman who spent 9 years waiting for a death sentence because she brought water to a couple of Muslim women, and those Muslim women could not touch that or drink that because she was a Christian. And then they accused her of saying blasphemous things about the Prophet Muhammad, and there are huge riots because the Pakistani Supreme Court just let her go. After 9 years, they refused to execute her. She has asked for asylum for her and her family in the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom, if I can just translate United Kingdom bullcrap into English, said, "We're afraid of our Muslim population here. We have too many Islamicists that would rise up and cause too many problems. And so, no asylum for you." So this Christian woman is left in Pakistan with no place to go. And there's a couple of reasons I want to bring up this story. We should be offering her amnesty. Please, Mr. President, offer her amnesty. Her name is Asia Bibi. We're going to tell you her story and also get the viewpoint from what's really going on in Great Britain. I think the United Kingdom has been lost. I think they are truly afraid now of the Islamicists. And I don't think there's anything left, or they're really at least really close to having nothing left. We'll go to Great Britain when we come back.
Glenn Beck.
Christian mother Asia Bibi continues to remain in Pakistan despite open threats against her life from Islamic radicals who are desperate to, quote, finish the job and execute the harmless mother of two, despite the fact that she was acquitted by the Supreme Court on bogus charges of blasphemy. This is the opening paragraph from Will Maul. Asia Bibi's life still in grave danger as she desperately seeks asylum in the West. From faithwire.com. Will, welcome to the program. Are you there, Will?
I'm here, yeah.
Yes. I'm gravely concerned about this and what it says about the United Kingdom, and I wanted to get your perspective. But first, fill the audience in just a little bit on who she is.
Yeah, so Asia Bibi, she's a 53-year-old Pakistani Christian woman who about 10 years ago, actually in 2009, was convicted on charges of blasphemy. And that was basically as a result of her getting into an argument with a group of women while she was working on her farm. The women accused her of drinking from the same tap as them and said, "Because you're a Christian, you know, we think you're unclean, and actually this is offensive." And she then allegedly responded, "Well, Jesus Christ died for my sins, and what did the Prophet Muhammad do for you?" That has since now been proved to actually be wrong. She didn't say that at all. But at the time, that was what they claimed, and a big, you know, she got mobbed at her house, arrested, and was tried and then convicted in 2010 of blasphemy.
Can I tell you,
death.
Let me just make a comment here. If your God can't handle some earthling saying, "Well, Jesus Christ died for my sins, what has your God done for you?" If he can't handle that, your God ain't powerful enough. If he needs you to kill others for saying things like that, it's just outrageous that in this time when we are rehashing the past, that we have an actual, hey, whites only, Muslims only water fountain dispute and blasphemy, and nobody on the left seems to even care.
Yeah, right. Right, and then, of course, 10 years later, she's in prison, and 10 years later, this case finally goes to the Supreme Court in Pakistan, and everyone's kind of holding their breath because we think there's just no way they're going to rule in her favor. And then they make this landmark ruling just last month on the 31st, saying that, you know, the sisters who are accused had no regard for truth, and that they threw it out completely and declared her innocent. They said, actually, it was crazy. They said something. They said it was nothing short of concoction incarnate. Basically, saying it was all completely made up, and they were going to free her. And of course, then that sparked huge, massive uproar in Pakistan amongst the radicals who are now still campaigning for her to be executed.
And it's not a small group of radicals. This is a major, at least the videos seem to be major movements in the streets.
Yeah, huge crowds. A couple of weeks ago, towards the end of the week, it was getting ridiculous. I mean, 3,000 or 4,000 strong crowds in the streets, demanding her death, or at least demanding an appeal against the ruling. And initially, the Prime Minister Imran Khan, he seemed like he was going to stay strong. You know, he made a public address to the country where he basically said, "We won't be, we won't be cowed by these clerics, and actually, we're going to uphold the rule of law here, and this is the final ruling." And then, of course, a few days later, entered into talks with a lot of the clerics and the political parties, and agreed some things which were pretty disturbing.
So now she wants to come to the United Kingdom, and over the weekend, right, the United Kingdom, in the biggest act of cowardice I have ever seen from Great Britain, and something that is gravely disturbing, in a nutshell, tell me if I don't speak the Queen's English, but I do. I'm an alcoholic, so I do speak bullcrap. And if I may translate the Queen's English out of bullcrap into regular people speak, what they said was, we're afraid of our Islamicist communities. We're afraid they're going to rise up, and we don't feel comfortable taking you in. So go find some other place to ask for help.
Yeah. There was the head of the British Pakistani Christian Association. That was exactly what he's been campaigning for about, 10 to the entire time that she's been in prison. He's been campaigning for her release. And that was his understanding through getting in touch with MPs and actually putting the case to them and saying, why are we not immediately offering asylum, was that the government is just worried about what they call security concerns. No one really knows quite what that means. But like you said, that there might be attacks on embassies and all sorts. But it's very vague. And actually, I mean, I've actually just heard from a couple of members in parliament on this. And there are guys who are vouching for asylum. I mean, I've just heard from MP Desmond Swain, who's just told me he's just written to the Prime Minister with his colleagues asking for to be given asylum here. So there are MPs who are doing this. It's just a case of actually trying to grasp why the UK is holding back. And really, there is, in my mind, there's no reason why we should be at all.
Unless you think that the United Kingdom, is not under the influence now of Islamicists. I mean, to me, this screams cowardice, and it screams we're on our last leg here. If you are afraid of a group of people and what they're going to do to the streets of Great Britain, or what might happen to your embassies, you are not a world power. In fact, you're not a power at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, we're seeing, particularly today, we're seeing more and more people come out and actually advocate. I mean, Boris Johnson, the former foreign secretary, today said that there's absolutely no reason why we should. You know, we've got a moral responsibility, an absolute responsibility, the British government does to offer asylum. And really, I don't really see why. I can't see personally why there's any reason why we shouldn't be. The Home Office doesn't comment on particular, like on individual cases, which is frustrating. And then there's various news outlets in the UK who are reporting that the government has said things like, we welcome the assurance of the Pakistan government that's, is keeping her safe and things. Because, of course, Asia Bibi is being held in Islamabad under guard in an undisclosed location. So they're sort of saying, well, we trust the Pakistani authorities to keep us safe until something can be organized. But the problem with that is that at the moment, the Pakistani government is saying, well, we won't stop any appeals that are lodged that could appeal her sentencing and even overturn it. So that was one of the criteria of the deal that they did with the Islamists. So it's it's difficult, and I think there's just nothing really else other than MPs writing to the Prime Minister, which Desmond Swain's just told me he's done. Actually, I've just heard from a European Member of Parliament as well, who has told me that it's immoral that Britain will allow thousands of illegal economic migrants to come into a country pretending to be refugees in need of asylum, and then bar Asia Bibi, a young woman in danger of the most terrible mob death because she's a believing Christian. If Asia cannot claim asylum in Britain, then Britain must ask itself what sort of country we have become.
This is it's and you know what? He's absolutely right. And this will be remembered in history. This is a very big moment for the United Kingdom. And it signals, I think, to those of us who stand in America that, you know, our ally is weaker than we ever thought. I mean, you know, this is, you know, pre-World War II kind of stuff that is happening here. And if you're afraid of your own population, boy, that's real trouble. Can you tell me also what's happening with the Scotland Yard just started an investigation in the Labour Party because of anti-Semitism, because it's getting so bad there now as well? Can you tell me anything about the Labour Party and what's happening on that?
Yeah, there is. It's a deepening investigation. It was, I think, sparked by Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour Party leader's attendance at a group, and I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but it was a group which is heavily associated with an anti-Semitic message, and he went sort of to go and greet them and spent a few hours with them. And so I think from that point forward, then it wasn't immediately condemned. The Labour Party didn't immediately distance itself from, obviously they can't really distance themselves from their party leader, but Jeremy Corbyn in particular didn't distance himself from the meeting and condemn it entirely. So I think from that point forward, the Scotland Yard have looked to widen their investigation into that. But of course, that's still ongoing, and they remain quite quiet on what they found thus far.
It is amazing to see what's happening there, especially with, you know, the people who are in Brexit. They're being called all kinds of names. And then Labour Party's not for Brexit, are they?
No, yeah. very much not.
Yeah, and then you see this going on. Will, thank you very much, and will you just keep us up to speed? And feel free, please, to reach out and bring us updates on what's happening. I'm fascinated by this, and it's not getting very much coverage here in the United States.
Okay,
thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you.
You bet. From FaithWire.com, Will Maul.
That is really discouraging. It's just you hope that there's those bastions of, you know, sense still in the world, and it's hard to find them these days.
I will tell you, I started looking up stories about what the Islamicists' influence is in England right now. The sex ring scandal is so horrific. I mean, tens of thousands of children. And the police have done nothing, and the press is keeping it quiet. And, you know, people from Britain are like, wait a minute. I'm a citizen here. This is my children. This is my daughter. You're doing nothing. And they're doing nothing. They are terrified of the Islamists in Great Britain. It's changing. Europe is going to fall. And England could fall if they don't wake up pretty soon. It's entering those darkest hours that Winston Churchill used to talk about. All right, I want to talk to you a little bit about Goldline. The world is changing. The world is changing. And in the next few weeks, I hope to be able to spend some time and talk to you about the shortage of cash. And this seems really weird because we're printing all of this money. How could we possibly have a shortage of cash? Well, the Fed is raising the interest rates, bringing that all in. Plus, the world is looking for dollars because the world has to pay their debts back in dollars. So some of these emerging companies or countries are going to basically, you know, loan sharks to borrow the dollars to be able to pay the loans back that they own. Meanwhile, we're looking to borrow dollars as a government as well. I think it's up to 1.6 trillion now. And eventually there's just not enough money to go around as the Fed is bringing it all in. You're going to be competing. Inflation is already starting to happen. We are, you know, God forbid, we're one real shakeup away from having real catastrophe here. Please protect yourself. Find out if gold or silver is right for you. I want you to call Goldline at 1-866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE. There are things that are happening that the media is just so far gone, they're just not going to address them. But those who are paying attention, and I'm trying to pay attention so you don't have to pay so much attention, but these things are on the horizon now. Please find out if gold or silver is right for you. Call 1-866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE, or goldline.com. We have a story that I want you to listen to that is a story about rampant intolerance towards LGBT people. They were harassed, they were bullied, they were assaulted, and it got so bad that they had to flee. Now, is this the first time you're hearing that sentence connected not to Donald Trump, but instead connected to the caravan? If so, you'd have to ask yourself, why? Because this is the virtue signaling kind of stuff that the left gets worked up about. They hear words and phrases like that, and they are ready to go fight those Trump supporters that are bullying those LGBT people, right? Except the bullies that we're talking about are not Americans. In fact, by most leftist accounts, they are victims. They are not necessarily victims, I guess. I guess the left is siding with the bullies this time. It's the migrant caravan. About 76 LGBT people have fled the main migrant caravan that is moving through Mexico. They have faced constant verbal abuse from their fellow migrants for being LGBT. Homophobia doesn't seem very tolerant. It's almost as if the caravan is not this doe-eyed group of angelic wanderers that the media has led us to believe. But there might be some real intolerance there. But wait, I thought intolerance only came from the white man. I will tell you this, and I mean this sincerely. I hope there's some sensitivity training before they get to California. And maybe Starbucks could fly down there and they could pay for it and do one of their little coffee clatches and spread what they've already. And maybe they could hire all of these migrant workers. That would be great. The LGBT caravan members had plenty more to say about the living conditions of the caravan. One of them told NBC, even to bathe was a big problem, and when we wanted to shower, there was no shower, and the same with the food. So here we are. What is the left to do? The left has this obsession with protecting disadvantaged and bullied people, and yet they are defending a horde of people who have elements of homophobia so strong that 76 members of their own community had to flee for safety. For safety. Safety. I imagine that they mean that word in the traditional way, not like it's meant on campuses, like, he hurt my feelings. Did you see the t-shirt he was wearing? It has a flag on it. This, they're fleeing for actual safety. So what are they going to do? Well, if you're a postmodernist, you ignore it. Because they are higher on the food chain. Even those who are dominating and persecuting the homosexuals in this group, even they, as bad as they are still higher on the food chain because they've been intersected by the white man. And so they've been an oppressed people. And yes, they're oppressing people, but they're not like the oppressor. So say nothing, do nothing.
I was reading the other day about a board game that it's about victimization. And like, I think the goal of the board game is to be the most victimized. Like, you have to be on the top of the I'm a victim intersectionality scoreboard.
Oh, I love this game.
We could find it. It would be fun to play.
Yeah, that'd be fun to play. I'd love that game. It just shows us, you know, when we were building a great nation, we played Monopoly. teach you about capitalism, honesty, winners and losers, and monopolies, and how bad monopolies can be.
Right.
Now we're playing the victim game.
I love that.
I love that.
Try to be the most victimized person possible. And it's no surprise. We talked about this story earlier with Pat Gray a couple of hours ago, where a student, I think it was at Kansas State, found a racist note on his door that said, like, the N-word lives here, beware, or something like that. And of course, as all of these stories seem to pan out the same way, it was actually him who wrote the note. But is that a surprising thing in a society that praises victimhood like we do? I mean, it's the ultimate thing you want to be, it seems like. You have to have that argument of how you're a victim all the time.
It is a race to the bottom.
And it's such a strange thing. And I think we all sort of play into it at some level. A lot of people will be like, oh, I'm not rich or I'm not like that. I'm not like one of those evil rich people. And it's like, well, you know, I mean, I know this audience maybe doesn't do that, but a lot of people do. And not even, you know, we don't aspire anymore to these things. Every politician will come out and say, you know, we all just want to be middle class. We're trying to get, like, that's not what you aspire to. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being middle class. It's fantastic. A lot of people, it's not the end all be all of your life's value by any means, but all of us would love to win the lottery and we'd love to be mega rich because it makes everything easier.
Right.
Yeah, we'd all love it if it could happen. I mean, if that's what your highest priority.
If that's what your highest priority is, no, and
even if it's your lowest, it's not a high priority. Still, it makes things easier. Even if what you want to do is give all millions away to charity, and you're the best person in the universe, you're never going to buy anything nice.
Let me say this: if it defines you, yeah, that might be a problem.
Mm-hmm,
but
definitely.
Being rich, being poor, it doesn't matter.
Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Monica Lewinsky is finally opening up about the affair with Bill Clinton. She's talking about things she's never talked about before. And I find this so interesting on so many levels. One of the levels being, gee, the Clinton dynasty is over. Now all of a sudden everybody wants to produce a documentary on how bad this was. Or
well, how long did we have to wait for Chappaquiddick to come out in theaters?
He had to die.
The woman who played Mary Jo Kopechne wasn't born for like 12 years after Kopechne died. That's how long we had to wait for that movie. We had to wait that long.
It's crazy.
You wait until there's not one last gasp left in the dynasty, and then these movies come out.
And except I think this is, there wasn't one last gasp, and now it's kind of, now I think the left is kind of like, do it. Let's make this into a bigger thing, because I think the Crypt Keeper is coming back. I think that coffin is starting to open.
There was that big op-ed in the Wall Street Journal from two of her former advisors who said she is going to run and she is going to win, and it's going to be Clinton 4.0, which is going to be very Bernie Sanders-like, embracing
Nobody's
all of her.
Nobody's going to believe this.
Well, remember Clinton 1.0? And Clinton 1.0 was Hillary Care, right?
Yes.
Big government, like expansion everywhere. Seemingly out of step with her husband, who was, you know, trying to act like a centrist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after running against Obama and losing, and then running against Trump and losing, now she's going full Bernie. She's going back to that whole big government, Hillary Care. I don't think it's true. But I don't understand the op-ed if it's not true. Why would her advisors be coming out and saying this if it's not true?
I don't know. Here's what Lewinsky has done now. She just sat down for numerous interviews with A&E for a docuseries, The Clinton Affair. She discusses now, for the first time, that she wasn't even aware that the dress was stained until later, and then she thought she got spinach dip on it. It's bad. She also said she got the stain after performing a sex act on the president in the Oval Office bathroom.
Class.
Yeah, really, really classy. Now listen to this. So she said, I went to dinner that night and none of the people said to me, hey, you've got to go to the bathroom. You've got stuff all over your dress. She reveals that she was beckoned to the White House with a promise of a present, entered the Oval with Clinton and his secretary, who quickly hid out in the dining room. Clinton then handed out his gifts for Lewinsky, which included a hat pin, telling her, you always look so cute in hats, or you and your hats, or something like that, Lewinsky said. That was followed by a really beautiful copy of Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my gosh, this guy.
This guy. No chance he actually read Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass. It's just the thing he picked up out of the shelf on his way in.
Gosh, oh, my gosh. That was followed by the Leaves of Grass, which was followed quickly to a trip to the lavatory.
So here's your book of poetry.
Yeah.
Now get down on the tile.
Right. So we moved to the bathroom where we were more intimate.
Mm.
And there was some attention paid on me, and then I was reciprocating.
Oh, gosh.
Where up until this point, he had always stopped before completion. But I stood up and I said, I want more. I want to move past this stage. And he finally said, okay.
Oh, what a romantic gesture.
He finally said, okay.
He gave in. What a wonderful gift there. What a self-sacrifice by Big Bill.
Right. So she said, I finished and then I stood up and I hugged him. He hugged me and off I went. It was the hug that left the stain.
Oh, my gosh. There's the lesson for you, kids. Don't hug afterwards. That's apparently what we're learning from Bill and Monica.
Amazing. It's amazing.
This is not a good story.
This is crazy. As soon as Hillary is out, they are dogpiling on this. It's incredible.
It really is interesting.
Ahead of the show's premiere, she opened up about the affair in an essay for Vanity Fair in which she expresses her disappointment in Bill. Now, what is your recollection of what she always said about Bill Clinton?
She was very much in love with Bill, it seemed like. It was not, you know, this is why I have a problem with her being trotted around as a victim of the Me Too movement, because she was very much into it, was a willing participant, and was very much in love with him, at least to her telling. Now, you know, the idea is, oh, well, he was powerful, and then she should have known. Now, remember, she's an adult here. This is not a child. And people,
she's 21.
People like to, we were beating up on Hillary for making that point recently. She said, you know, she was an adult. Well, she was an adult. The idea that we have to take agency away from 21-year-old females is a little ridiculous. They have to be, we all make bad decisions at times in our lives, but we're responsible for them when we're 21. Okay? That's part of it. And the idea that, she is...
And by the way, this is a new thing. You were able to marry when you were 13, mainly because you were dead by the time you were 30. But kids took responsibility. They can do a lot more than we expect of them. Anyway, she said that in this article, she expresses disappointment that Bill doesn't think that he should apologize to her.
I mean, the apology, I guess, and the accusation here is that he was so powerful and she couldn't resist because she was so powerful, or that she was afraid that her job would be affected. That's the normal accusation when it comes to a Me Too situation. But that's not the situation with Monica Lewinsky. She was never in the past accused him of, he tried to shut down my life because of this. It was...
Nope.
I mean, it certainly did affect her life in a big way, more just because it came to the public's eye, though, not because, you know, Bill was trying to ruin her life before it came to the public's eye. Now, when it came to the public's eye, the Clintons did all sorts of bad things to her, but that's not as much a Me Too thing as it is a political, you know, protection game. I mean, they tried to guard his reputation as long as they could until this dress, right? I mean, they would have kept going with it.
She's the only one that he didn't try to destroy, though. Everybody else, they just destroyed.
Yeah, I don't think that's
the
true.
Closest he came to that was, I didn't have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky.
And her operatives did, their operatives did try to destroy her. He tried to make it seem like he was, I think he understood the optics of it.
Yeah.
That woman, Miss Lewinsky, was a moment where he recognized, I can't call her that woman.
Yes, correct. The process of the docuseries, she said, led me to new rooms of shame that I still needed to explore. I think if I could interview anybody, it would be Monica Lewinsky.
Anybody? Oh, you might have a chance here. She's got a new series out.
She won't.
Be an interesting conversation.
I would love to talk to her. She then lists off examples of grief, ending with grief for a relationship that had no normal closure instead was slowly dismantled by two decades of Bill Clinton's behavior that eventually helped me understand how at 22, I took the small, narrow sliver of the man I knew and mistook it for the whole. So I guess that's where her grievance is. But, I mean, don't we all do that? I mean, we do that no matter how old we are. We look at people and we don't necessarily always see the whole person.
I think this is a distinction we're losing in 2018, which is there's a difference between the Me Too movement and a good old-fashioned affair. Right? What they had was an affair.
It was an affair in which the traditional
affair of a powerful person hooking up with their secretary or whatever it is. It was a good old-fashioned affair. It was not a pretty situation, as we've heard too much detail here in this particular break. But to act as if, she was victimized, I think, by the media. She was victimized in some, based on some of her bad decisions. But she was based on, she was beat up by the media and politics in general. But the idea that she's an adult who willingly enters into a consensual affair with someone else, that is not the definition. It shouldn't be the definition of what the Me Too movement's about.
Yeah, and she's never played the victim card. She's never played the victim card. She said in an interview, what feels so important to me, I'm not necessarily owed or deserving of a personal apology from Bill Clinton. Hmm. My belief is that Bill Clinton should want to apologize. I'm less disappointed in him, more disappointed for him. He would be a better man for it, and we'd be a better society. I think she's right on that. If you want to know what power looks like, watch a man safely, even smugly, do interviews for decades without ever worrying about if he'll be asked the question he doesn't want to answer.
I see. That's the thing, though. I think she identifies that as power. Where I think it's quite clear what that is progressivism. It's liberalism. If he was, you're telling me, the Republicans who go through these things get asked about them forever. They always have to answer those questions every time. How many times do you have an interview with a mainstream media source in which they don't ask you about the three or four worst things you've ever said on the air?
Never.
It's a prerequisite to every interview you will ever do.
Yeah. And they always say the same thing. I'll always say, it's been asked and answered many times. Yeah. Well, but I'll get heat if I don't ask that question.
And that's not the case with Bill Clinton until now.
Until now.
That's the only change with the Me Too thing. And it's really a change because Hillary Clinton didn't visit Michigan enough. That's really the reason they care about this. If she had gone to visit Michigan and Pennsylvania a little bit more, this may have been a completely different story.
We would not be hearing about this at all. She's also quick to admit that she has some people to apologize for her actions. My first public words after the scandal, uttered in an interview with Barbara Walters in 1999, were an apology directly to Chelsea and Ms. Clinton. And if I were to see Hillary Clinton in person today, I know I would summon up whatever force I needed to acknowledge her sincerely and tell her how very sorry I am. I actually really like her.
She's got an interesting journey.
Yeah.
And I think her life as far as going through that, which, look, she's an adult. She made decisions. Yeah. A lot of them were bad at that time.
But, we were all 21.
Right. What I always say is, like, with her is, like, the punishment didn't really fit the crime, per se. She really had a hard, like, again, it's a serious thing she did. I mean, this is a married man, and there was a lot there. And certainly I'm not by any means indemnifying Clinton. I mean, Bill is the bigger offender there. He's the one that actually was in the marriage.
Relationship.
But, her doing that was a bad thing. I mean, she really paid for decades up for that, and she's known
when
for this one
name
thing.
Has become a verb.
Yeah, right. That's not, it's
that's
way too
good.
Much. Way too much.
Way too much.
And that is another problem we've talked about recently about how the country is just completely obsessed with the commander-in-chief. I mean, it would be healthier if maybe this wasn't the only thing we ever talked about.
And you know what's interesting? I don't think Lewinsky was... I don't think any of this had to happen. I think if Clinton would have admitted it, said I made a mistake, people would not have agreed. The conservatives would have said, then you shouldn't be in office, whatever. It wouldn't have stopped, but it wouldn't have dragged her through the mud.
Right.
Because she had to produce the blue dress. If he would have admitted it, we would never know about the blue dress. He only admitted it because of the blue dress, which made her even more tawdry in feeling. We didn't need to know any of
the
details.
Too much detail, yeah.
Way too much detail. You know, we wouldn't have known about all those things. Her name would have not been a verb had he admitted it and the press actually pursue it. Then the truth would have sanitized so much of it.
Remember, he got impeached because of perjury, lying, not because of the affair.
Yeah. If you're having financial problems, you may have solicited or been solicited by a credit repair service to settle all of your debts for less. But there are high costs involved in that, including fees. And, you know, the fees go right to the settlement company and then the taxes on your debt that you write off. Don't be fooled by these. I ask you, please, to research your options like debt consolidation. When you consolidate a debt, you're moving into a new loan that will pay off these things for you, a loan with more competitive interest rates, so you're not throwing money away. And because you're still paying off your own debt, your credit won't take a hit. In fact, it may actually help you increase your credit score. If you're a homeowner, take the smarter approach and get started today on debt consolidation. You can save up to $1,000 a month. Imagine $12,000 that you could save just in those interest payments. Pay the debt off. Put it behind you. Repair your credit. Stop living in fear. Call AmericanFinancing.net right now. Find out if they can help you. AmericanFinancing.net. Call them now. 800-906-2440. 800-906-2440. AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation. NMLS 182334. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
U.S. bishops have delayed action to address the sexual abuse in the church at the request of the Vatican. Why? What part? What part of the message of Christ does the Pope not understand? You know, whole thing about, you know, anybody hurts a child, you know, millstone, big body of water. What part of that don't you get? What are they waiting for?
Are they still waiting? How recent is this? Is this a current accusation?
Yeah, no, they want to delay the sexual abuse in the church. You know, all of the stuff that's been going on and been revealed lately. But we got to wait. Why?
It's not been a good run, I'll say that.
No.
Again, people, these organizations, and every organization needs to know this. If you're not an investigative organization, you shouldn't be investigating things. Colleges, when you have people who come and make accusations of sexual assault, not your gig to be able come up with a court and try to solve the case.
Excuse
me. Turn it over to the authorities.
But University of Kansas,
The dining commission.
The dining commission, yeah. That exposed that was a bogus racist charge.
I think we all understand there's an exception to this rule, and it's the Kansas State Dining Commission.
Okay.
I think we all understand.
Okay.
That. I don't
as
know
long
why
as
you needed to bring that up.
Okay. I mean, it's Secret
Everyone
Service, you know, right. It's military intelligence, and the Kansas University.
Kansas State Dining Commission.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kansas State. Mm-hmm. Dining Commission, because they're hard asses.
Oh, yeah.
They're real hard asses. All right. See you tomorrow. God bless.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.